Hello, welcome to Talk Dance. Talk Dance is a podcast on the Walker Arts Center's Walker channel devoted to in-depth conversations with today's leading dance artists. My name is Justin Jones. I'm a Minneapolis-based choreographer and dancer, and I'm also the producer slash host of this podcast. Tragil Harrell is an American choreographer best known for his series of works called 20 Looks or Paris is Burning at the Judson Church. Each of those pieces posed the question, what would have happened in 1963 if someone from the voguing ballroom scene in Harlem had come downtown to perform alongside the early postmoderns at Judson Church? Walker goers might remember seeing the first of those works, which was called Mimosa. This week, Harrell and a company of incredible international dance artists will be bringing the American premiere of Harrell's latest work, The Ghost of Montpellier Meets the Samurai, which imagines another historical meeting, this time between Dominique Bagouet, a pioneering French modern dance choreographer, and Tatsumi Hijikata, one of the founders of Butoh in Japan. I started our conversation asking Harrell about his own dance history.
Your work deals with history, dancing history, dance history, and I was just curious to hear yours. What your dance history is.
I grew up learning dances from my cousins and kids in the neighborhood. And dance was something that in my immediate family culture people did. Yeah, and when families came together for family reunions or in the house, my parents would put on music, we would dance, I would dance with my cousins. And
where
I think
this?
That would... This was growing up in Georgia. I think probably one of the things which marked me very early was the fact that I took gymnastics from the age of 8. For some reason, my gymnastics class was from 3 to 4, and my grandfather would pick me up. But I told him that my class ended at 5, because from 4 to 5, I would watch the girls ballet class. I would sit in the door and I would watch the class. And I remember not telling anyone that I was doing this, but that went on for a couple of years. And I was fascinated by this other thing and the dance classes that they took and the costumes. But I knew that at least where I lived, boys didn't take dance class. And I never kind of approached that. And I think the next significant thing for me was, which had a big part in a way, maybe not my dance history, but sort of my choreographic history, is that I did these History Day competitions that they have in the US, in which people, high schoolers and junior high schoolers, compete around a history topic. And there are different categories of competition. And the one I would enter every year was group performance. So I would put together a kind of group performance among the friends and classmates in the school. And we would go to competition. And I won state in group performance 6 years in a row. And so that was probably, I think, fueled this kind of relationship between history and art for me. And then it was a matter of I was doing theater really at Yale, and I then got introduced to Anne Bogart's Six Viewpoints, and that brought me back to my body. And from there, I realized that I really wanted to use my body. I didn't want to speak, and I started, you know, looking at a lot of dance in New York, and I started making my own kind of theater work, which was more performance art, poetry slash movement theater. And then eventually it became clear, mostly because a friend said it to me, I think you're trying to be a choreographer. And then I was like, oh, okay, a light kind of went off. And I right away, I think what distinguished my decision making was that I knew right away, because I had been exposed to the postmodern dance history, that I wanted to make my own work, and I wanted to make my, and I could understand that I could be a dancer, even though I hadn't had this kind of long-term formal training, and that I would make my own work, and I didn't want to dance for anyone else. I felt that would be that it would cost a lot of time, because I would spend a lot of time learning their movement, and then I would have to kind of, you know, edit it off of my body, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted the direct route to my own language and my own kind of grammar around choreography.
That's so interesting, because this current work, The Ghost, has a lot of text, and also what you're doing, at least in terms of how I understand maybe what your research is in embodying pre-existing forms in some way.
We really work in the imagination. So even, I mean, I think this is a misunderstanding around the work, that even if I'm working on voguing, and in this case, Buteau, we're not trying to create voguing in Buteau, that we work in the imagination, that we use a kind of theoretical lens to fuel a kind of, to generate a language on the stage and a movement practice, but it's more informed by, it's informed by operations that may be in those forms and theoretical ideas, but we're not fusing movement languages, you know, if that makes sense.
It does. And when you say using operations, I immediately thought, like, maybe you're taking an image or a prompt, say, from a Buteau exercise, and then using that as a way to generate movement. Is that possibly accurate?
I wouldn't say we did that, but that could be the case. The fact that we work with runway movement is an operation that voguing uses. Mm-hmm. Say, for example, Hijikata also did a lot of working with paintings and other European, like, he worked a lot with European painting. There's a whole section of Ghost that's based on Velázquez. Mm-hmm. So we use similar operations or things that they may have done. Or say Bagway was very well known for his very specific use of the hands. And there's a lot of that in Ghost. Mm. But we don't try to make Bagway movement, but there's this sense of the hands being very important, even if it's not a pronounced thing for the audience. You don't need to know that necessarily, but it was part of the way that I went into, in a way, developing my own aesthetic, because in the end, I'm not trying to, it's only a way to generate and get closer to what I want to make as myself, not to reconstruct. I mean, I think this is very important, that I don't do reconstructions. I'm not recreating pieces, at least not yet. You know, it's really a different kind of speculative process. It's a kind of speculative work.
Mm. Well, since you brought them up already, could you tell me who is the ghost and who is the samurai?
I mean, I think the easy answer to that is that people would say, ah, the ghost of Montpellier is Dominique Bagway and the samurai is Tatsumi Hijikata. But I think it's more complex than that. I think that, of course, that's the easy way. And it's kind of this cheesy B title it kind of relates to a kind of B movie title. Mm-hmm. But I think hopefully that the title from seeing the piece, that the title expands itself and it operates in different ways. And that superficial reading of it is only one way to see it.
Much of the writing, at least the promotional writing around the work, does bring up those two figures, Dominique Bagouet and Hijikata. I was curious just to hear about how you personally encountered their work and why they're so foregrounded, at least in that way.
Well, I was asked to, there was the 20th anniversary of Dominique Bagouet's death coming in 2012. And I was asked to contribute something to it. And I had an idea, and then the people at Montpellier Danse said, oh, that's a great idea, but you should make it into something larger for the festival. And I realized at that point that there had been a history of French choreographers kind of looking at the American dance history and doing these reconstructions. And so I automatically knew that, oh, okay, now I was the American kind of looking at the French dance history. And as I began to work on the piece, I realized that with my relation to history, I realized a lot of different things. But one thing is that in America, we don't know anything about French dance history outside of the ballet. And I thought that was strange, and that was said something about how we look at history and how we write history. And I thought, well, certainly then I don't want to establish another paradigmatic history, of course. I want to think about history in a broader and a more flexible sense of the word, and a creative sense. Since I was in this research already about Tatsumi Hijikata, I felt, well, why not bring them together? And then when I thought about the fact that they both had died rather young for the amount of work that they had done and for their history, and I started to see that there were other certain sort of links between them, I thought that they could be a perfect foil for each other.
I am most familiar with your work on the 20 Looks series. I'm wondering what feels new about this line of research?
I mean, I think that the first thing I was very much interested in is that this 20 Looks project had this important idea around the sizes of the pieces and how they were, in a way, enlarging the audience through each size, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to enlarge the audience even further with Ghost. I wanted to make this for a kind of mainstream audience. And I felt that none of the pieces before had gone that far. And I mean, mainstream is I don't know. I mean, it's a strange word, but I'm going to use it. And because these artists were important and they had really large visions, I wanted to see if I could introduce their work to a larger public. So that, and that was challenging, and that's a new challenge for me in a lot of ways, because it's like, how do you take this experimental work and make it interesting and interesting for people who don't know, perhaps don't have any relationship to contemporary dance, don't have any relationship to these artists, and maybe have no relationship to contemporary theater. You know, I didn't want the piece to be an homage, but I felt that if I was going to honor these ghosts in a way, how do I expand their legacy? Because to just write this piece for the people who already know wasn't interesting enough for me, you know? So that was the first kind of order of business, for lack of a better word. Then there is this relationship of a kind of this sense of artists who died before their work was finished in a certain type of way. This sense of, you know, whether it be Kurt Cobain or James Dean or what's her name, Amy Winehouse, or, you know, we have this fascination with people who died young somehow. And these two did, I think, but because they were in very unknown fields, they're not something, we didn't have a kind of cultural mourning or around them. And this kind of, you know, they don't exist in our pantheon of those people who we kind of still hold in a way. And I wanted to see if I could create that kind of mourning in this piece, a certain kind of mourning, but bring joy out of that mourning. Mm. And that is a real artistic maneuver that I didn't know how to do before, you know? How do you bring joy out of mourning in a way? But I didn't know how you take something that's tragic or mournful in a way and by the end get the audience to sense, to have this great appreciation for life and the joy that we're here together, even though we mourn, you know?
I wanted to ask you about how you're dealing with pop culture. When I talk about pop culture, I'm talking about music especially, but also fashion. How do you approach it conceptually? And what does it mean to you to have it be so present in your work?
I mean, it's very funny. It's funny that you ask this question as an American, because in France, this is a really big question for them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have this obsession with pop culture. I only have an obsession with what's in contemporary culture. And when I came to, I am post Warhol when I came to my sense of myself as an artist, those walls were broken down. So I don't see it as pop, you know what I mean? And I don't see that there, and people focus on that, but I see as much other kind of culture in the work as well. So I'm just responding to what's around me, but I think it does become more strategic in this piece in some ways, because I want it to put Bagway and Hijikata alongside other things that people would recognize. In the music, I have all kinds of music in this piece.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, I mean, but I think that I've now, because I did recognize, I must admit, I've recognized that people identify that so strongly,
mm-hmm.
that in the last pieces, I've removed a bit of it. I've been aware that it has a very strong power,
mm-hmm.
and I'm using this familiarity as a way to bring people together.
Tregel, thank you so much for taking your some time to talk to me today about The Ghost, and I really can't wait to see it live in Minneapolis, and I wish you all the best in all of your touring before you get here. Safe travels.
Yes, and I guess you know this, but Minneapolis is the American premiere, and this is the first piece that I did not premiere in the United States.
Wow.
And that was big,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah.
And it's very important. It's very nice for me that it's been being done at the Walker, and with Philip Byther, and the Jerome Foundation was such a huge supporter of my work. The 20 Looks Project and things throughout the years. And so it's very special that it's Minneapolis too.